Wunderschönen guten Morgen, ihr hört Insert Moin, ich bin der Daniel und ich habe euch heute ein Interview mit Sam Dyer mitgebracht. Gut, da werden jetzt die meisten wahrscheinlich sagen so, hey, wer ist denn das? Das ist auch vollkommen okay, aber vielleicht erinnert ihr euch an Folge 1851, als ich mit dem Sebo über das NES-Famicom A Visual Compendium Buch gesprochen habe. Dieses ganz tolle Artbook, was so eine Art in Buch gedruckte Liebeserklärung an die NES-Ära ist. Und der Sam ist tatsächlich derjenige, der diese Bücher macht und damit auch auf Kickstarter total erfolgreich ist. Hat jetzt jüngst erst den Kickstarter für das SNES-Buch abgeschlossen und hat da fast 225.000 Pfund erreicht. Und er hat sich bereit erklärt, mal für ein kleines Interview zur Verfügung zu stehen, wo er mal so ein bisschen über diese Bücher und alles, was da so mit zusammenhängt, redet. Aber jetzt genug der Vorrede. Jetzt viel Spaß mit dem Interview mit Sam Dyer. Kurze Anmerkung vielleicht noch und dann höre ich wirklich mit dem Reden hier auf und gebe ins Interview rüber. Das Interview ist komplett in Englisch, weil Sam natürlich Brite ist und deswegen werden wir jetzt gleich ins Englische rüberwechseln. Das nur als Anmerkung, dass ihr Bescheid wisst. Und jetzt viel Spaß. So, my guest today is Sam from England. Hi, Sam.
Hey, Daniel, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Very well. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, you're welcome. And you've been doing some very interesting things. That's why I wanted to have you on this podcast. And you are the creative director of a company called Bitmap Books, or at a company called Bitmap Books. And I'm not sure if all the people listening to this podcast actually know what Bitmap Books is, but I'm pretty sure they will know because you're the creator of a book we already talked about. And this is the NES or Famicom, A Visual Compendium, a book we had a podcast on. So it's not the first of its kind. So you already done some similar books about the Commodore 64 and the Amiga, but we'll get to that. So maybe you can just give a self introduction. What is the job of the creative director at the company you're working?
Yeah, sure. Well, my name's Sam Dyer, as you said, and I'm the creative director at Bitmap Books, and I actually founded the company back in 2014 because I had the idea to design a book on the Commodore 64 because I'm a graphic designer by sort of trade, and obviously I've got a massive love for retro gaming, and the Commodore 64 in particular was my first computer, so my first love. And yeah, I had the idea to produce a book on the Commodore 64, but a book that was very highly designed, you know, something that really look amazing and really sort of bring the pixel art and all that sort of stuff to life. So that's kind of where it all started, really, and started off very small. And as you mentioned, over the years, we've sort of done various other books. And yeah, and we're very, very lucky. We've got a very sort of loyal following of people who seem to really enjoy our books. And yeah, we're sort of covering lots of different systems now, and sort of things are getting quite sort of big.
So the company Bitmap Books was particularly founded for creating these books?
Exactly. Yeah, it was never intended to be sort of what it is today, if you like. It was just started to do the Commodore 64 book and just sort of see what would happen. And as I said, over the years, it's just sort of grown into this wonderful thing it is now, and sort of lots of very passionate sort of customers who really enjoy our books. So yeah, it's lovely to see how it's sort of grown naturally, really.
So you already said that one of the ideas of creating these books was because you were a retro fan. So is it that you are a fan of retro games in particular, or games in general?
Oh, definitely retro games. Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of modern games. Retro all the way.
Are the books created just by you, or do you have a team of writers, a staff working for you, like planning, researching, and creating the book itself?
Yeah, so Bitmap Books is just me. I'm the sole person who sort of works Bitmap Books, but I pull in sort of freelance writers and illustrators and photographers as and when, really. There's been a couple of mainstays throughout a lot of the books I've done, particularly a guy called Steve Jarrett, who's a very well-known games journalist, probably mostly in the UK, because he launched Edge magazine and Official PlayStation magazine for Future Publishing and many others in the UK. So Steve's really been, because obviously I can do the visual sort of graphic design, but Steve's brought a massive professionalism to the writing and the proofreading and all that sort of side of things. And yeah, I use, as I said, illustrators, pixel artists, photographers, proofreaders. It really depends on what the book is, really. And I've just got a pool of people that I can call on to help out.
And how long do you work on a book, like in all, like planning, researching, printing and everything?
From initial idea to it actually being sort of a real book, being sent out to customers, I'd probably say it takes about a year. That's obviously quite a lot of sort of at the start of sort of mulling over the idea, researching, you know, doing some initial designs. And then typically I would spend around about a month, you know, really sort of getting into the design, working up a few sort of spread designs. And then typically if we use something like Kickstarter to raise funds for the book, that would take about a month. And then there'd be about 3 months of solid design to get the book completely written, designed, and ready for the printers. And then printing typically takes 2 to 3 months. It's quite a long process. So, yeah, probably about a year from the very initial idea to it actually being delivered to customers is about a year. So it sounds like quite a long time, but it's quite a lot, you know, quite a lot happens in that year, I suppose.
What is the hardest part of creating the book, or which part of the process is where you probably, I don't know, just think about like just stopping it and say, well, it's too hard, it's not going to work?
I'd probably say around copyright. I'd say that's probably one of the hardest things that I've had to overcome and learn about is probably copyright and that sort of side of publishing, because yeah, obviously, you know, a lot of the games are copyrighted material, so it is an issue. I've had to have lots of legal advice and, you know, do lots of learning myself around what I can do and what I can't do. So to answer your question, I'd probably say something like copyright, because it completely takes the fun out of, you know, takes the enjoyment out of it dealing with something like copyright, because it can be quite sort of frustrating. Also, probably another thing that I find hard is the writing side of things. That's why I work with Steve, but it's something that doesn't necessarily come natural to me. I'm definitely more of, you know, more comfortable doing the sort of pictures and leave the words up to Steve.
So getting back to the copyright thing, which totally makes sense, because I guess once lawyers get involved in anything, like they take the fun out of anything. So someone who actually funded the NES book on Kickstarter told me a story that you had some copyright issues with Nintendo, and that in the end they required a minimum of text per page to use their screenshots, and otherwise if there's not enough text on a page they wouldn't allow to use the graphics. Is that a true story?
That's kind of, yeah, that's very loosely what happened. I mean, I can't actually go into details about exactly what Nintendo told me to do to make the book okay, because they've told me that I can't sort of disclose that. Mm-hmm. But I will say that, yeah, so Nintendo weren't particularly happy with some of the design, and it was just a massive learning curve for me, that project. And at the time, it was a horrible thing to happen. But I think actually taking positives from it, it's made me a lot more understand copyright a lot better and what you can and can't do. But to be fair to Nintendo, you know, they were very good to me. And after some simple tweaks, and one of them was sort of adding a bit more text, it was, yeah, they were happy for the book to be published, which was a huge relief because there's a lot of people excited about it, and I'd obviously spent quite a lot of time designing it.
And I guess you learned from that, because now the project you are working on as of right now is the Super Nintendo Compendium, and I guess you will not be doing the same copyright mistakes, if you will.
On this No, I certainly won't be making those mistakes again.
Yeah, and you have the number of the Nintendo lawyers on fast dial, so probably everything you want to know is a very quick phone call. So you already mentioned that you took some of your books, I'm not sure if all of them, to Kickstarter. So why did you turn to crowdfunding? Why not take the sort of traditional way of publishing a book, which is just like creating it and then having it published by a big publishing house, which is something they do for a living, basically?
Yeah, I suppose the reason I initially went to Kickstarter is because there have been a couple of other books that had been funded via Kickstarter, and there seemed to be a bit of a community building up around that, and it seems like a really great way to engage with people who are interested in retro gaming, because obviously this interest of ours, this hobby, is so niche. A lot of publishers you go to, if you went to one of the well-known publishers and said you had a book about the Commodore 64, they wouldn't be interested, because they just think the audience would be so small. That would be one of the biggest challenges. And I guess with something like Kickstarter, you can engage direct with customers, you know, and cutting out the publisher, if you like. And some, like self-publishing via Kickstarter has got massive advantages in that you don't have to answer to a publisher. So you get to, you know, the book, you get to create the book that is in your head that you really want to produce without any sort of meddling from a publisher. I think it's the perfect way. It's the perfect way. And obviously I didn't have the money in my bank account to self-fund myself. So it's a great way of raising funds and, you know, finding out if there's a market out there for it, because, you know, I could have put the book out there and, you know, nobody wanted to buy it. And if that had happened, then I wouldn't have lost anything. So I think Kickstarter is a great thing especially for book publishing. I think it's really cool.
Right. And you just finished the Kickstarter campaign for the Super Nintendo Compendium, and it was a huge success. I mean, you almost had £225,000, and initially you aimed for about £25,000, so 10 times the amount. So it obviously shows there's the market for that kind of book.
Yeah, and that's that. So that's been the last sort of three or four years of building my reputation and my brand and delivering sort of, you know, books that people have liked. And that's what I meant earlier when I said it sort of snowballed, really, that it's gone from the initial Commodore 64 but right up into sort of getting 5,000 backers, which is just crazy, really. You know, I'm very sort of humbled by that 5,000 people would want a book that I've designed is quite an amazing thing, actually.
It is. And have you been approached by some publishing house, or is it that you're already saying, well, I already have my audience and I don't need these publishers anymore, because, as you said, I can directly talk to the customers via Kickstarter?
Yeah, no, I've never been approached by a publisher. I mean, sort of going back to what I said a minute ago, I do think a lot of publishers still think that something like retro gaming is too niche. And I'm not too sure whether they're all that interested, really. I mean, if it gets bigger, then maybe they might start sort of making approaches to people like myself, if they can see there's a big enough market. But no, I mean, I just think I'd much prefer self-publishing, because you get to keep the control, the creative direction, the vision. You can sort of see that through. So I think it definitely suits me that way.
One thing we were wondering about in the podcast about the NES book is, how do you choose the games which are featured in the book? Because I think there are about 700 NES games which were released back in the day, and about 130, or around that 130-ish in the book. So how many discussions did you and your staff have about, well, we have to feature that game and we shouldn't feature that one because that wasn't that good? So is that a lot of discussion going on?
Yeah, I think actually this is probably one of the hard, you know, your earlier question about what's one of the hardest things. This is definitely one of the hardest things, I should say. It is very, very difficult. I mean, what I try and do is be consistent in the games that I'm choosing for out of the books. So as they're visual compendiums, I think first and foremost, the games have to look good. There's been a couple of instances where there's been a classic game that I've had to, not necessarily on the NES, but across all the books, that I've had to maybe not include just because it didn't have very good graphics and it just wouldn't look very good in the book. So that's always kind of forefront of my mind, is it going to make a good spread? Has it got good graphics? And I mean, a good place to start is always just the sort of, you know, the classic top 100 games, and then sort of just build from there, really. I always like to dig deep into, you know, obscure games and Japanese exclusives and all that sort of stuff. So the books cover the obvious choices, but they also dig a little bit deeper, and maybe a couple of titles in there that people maybe haven't heard of before, or, you know, they were a bit surprised to see it included. Especially on the NES, you know, some of the Japanese games had amazing graphics, but just not very well known. But no, to answer your question, it's definitely the hardest thing. I mean, the Commodore 64 had thousands and thousands and thousands of games. You know, that was even harder to get that down to sort of 200. It's very, very challenging.
And it was never an option, I guess, to feature all of them. You always wanted this compendium to be sort of like a best of, right?
Yeah. I think people have mentioned that before. You know, why can't you include all of them? It's just not that kind of book. There are sort of books out there that sort of do that show every single game. But yeah, as you said, it is the sort of the greatest hits, if you like. And the problem with this is that unfortunately you can never please everyone, which is a lesson I learned very early on in doing this, is, you know, you're always going to miss out someone's favorite game, and they're going to be upset about it. And you just can't please everyone. You just got to stick to what you believe in and follow the rules about them, all the games having good graphics. And I think it's kind of worked so far, I think.
Yeah, that's true. I guess there will always be people complaining because in the end, it's the internet. So one thing we were really, really wondering when we saw the book, and I'm not making this up, is why is it so affordable? Because it's only £25. So that's about 30 euros, which we considered a pretty decent price for an art book, if you will, of this quality. So it has a very high printing quality, lots of attention to details, lots of funny, how shall I put it, like funny printing things where we use different colors, and it comes in a special box and has this 3D image on the front. So that all costs money in just printing and producing, and not even talking about the time creating it. So why, I mean, this may sound like a stupid question, but why not take more money for that? Because my guess is people will pay it.
Yeah, I could do. I suppose I've taken the approach that I'd rather offer a product that is affordable and sort of sell more, if that makes sense. I think that, I don't know what people normally pay for books in sort of Germany, but in the UK, I think £25 is quite expensive for a book over here. And some I charge £30 for, which I think is the sort of top level, really. I think any higher than that, and I think I would start putting a lot of people off. And that's not my intention. I'd rather more people have this in their hands and enjoy it. And I'm very lucky to work with printers that, you know, because I can print the volume, the print costs get a bit lower. So it means I can do some nice things like slip cases.
All right. Just to give you a idea, I think that especially if you have these, I'm not talking about like books you just read and throw them away. It's like because that's not the kind of books obviously you're creating. You're creating these books you keep around and have in your living room and show to your guests and stuff. And like art books, picture books you keep for a while. And I think they could be, especially if they are produced in a very small number, they could probably go up to 80 euros or something like that. So I guess they would be much more expensive. So as I said, we thought that 30 euros was way more affordable than we expected it, looking at the quality and the amount of stuff you gave to people. So, but that's just our opinion. So you already said that you preferred the old retro games towards the new stuff. So do you still consider the Xbox a retro, the first Xbox a retro console, or the Wii or the PlayStation? I guess you know where my question points at is, will you keep on doing this? So will we see a Xbox compendium, a Wii compendium, or a PlayStation compendium sometime further down the road?
I think the old what's retro question is quite a starts a few arguments, that one. I think everyone's got a different opinion on what's retro. For me, currently the PlayStation 1 sort of era feels retro enough to me at the moment to warrant this kind of book. My only concern, and this is just an initial thing, is because I've got massive love for pixels. Mm-hmm. And obviously the PlayStation used a lot of polygons, and I'm slightly nervous to what those graphics will look like in a book without the sort of been previewed on like a CRT TV, because without all of that they just look a bit weird. So I think if I was to do a PlayStation book, I may have to look at some sort of imitation of the scan lines. That's just my initial reaction to something like that. I would need to look into it. But no, I definitely think PS1, N64, all of that sort of stuff is retro now, and Xbox, sure, but for me, probably in a few years' time. I think there's still plenty of the earlier systems that I haven't even touched yet, such as Sega, Atari, you know, PC Engine, all of those sorts of systems which I haven't even touched yet.
Okay, that's great to hear, but obviously that's not something you have to worry about as of right now. It's just that I'd love to see a Xbox compendium or a PlayStation compendium made with the same quality and attention to detail that obviously you take towards all these other books I've already been seeing by you. So that's something I'd really, really wanted to see down the road, but... Well, great. So thanks very much for the interview. I really, really look forward to the Super Nintendo Compendium, which shall be around November or something this year, right?
That's correct, yeah.
So I'm really looking forward for that, and all the best to you. And I hope that your audience grows, that the people... backing you on Kickstarter still support you for a number of books, because it's really something that I enjoy looking through all the time, and the especially the NES, because that's the first one I got to see by you. That's something that convinced me that's something I want to like spend money on, and something I want to keep around for years and show it to people at my house and stuff. Great. Thank you very much, and all the best for the future of Bitmap Books, and especially to you personally.
Thanks for having me, Daniel.
Bye-bye.
Bye.